This is Dr. Chad Edwards, and you are listening to podcast number 18 of Against the Grain. Are you tired and fatigued? Are you frustrated with doctors because they just don't seem to listen? Do you want to fix your pain without surgery? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then we are the clinic for you. We offer prolotherapy, PRP, and stem cell injections, IV nutritional therapies, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, and functional medicine to get you back on track to optimal health. Call us at 918-935-3636 or visit our website at www.revolutionhealth.org to schedule your appointment today.
Welcome to Against the Grain Podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards, where he challenges the status quo when it comes to medicine. We get into hot topics in the medical field with real stories from real patients to help you on your way to a healthy lifestyle. Get ready, because we're about to go against the grain.
Welcome back. So glad you're back to hear what we have to say today. This is Dr. Chad Edwards, and I'm here with Marshall, and we're going to talk about some good stuff today.
Oh, yeah. I'm pumped. This is pretty educational for me.
I'll tell you, this topic is, I'm pretty passionate about this topic. I've experienced this issue myself. Number two, you talk about controversy. I mean, you go take this to your standard inside the box primary care physician and say, hey, I have adrenal fatigue. And you might get laughed at. And the funny thing is we, and one of the things that just gets me totally fired up, and I just want to like slap people and say, why in the world don't you understand that this can actually happen when it works? We discuss this with the pancreas when it comes to diabetes, because it gets fatigued and it quits working. And we see this with the testicles and testosterone. We see this with thyroid. Why on earth can't it happen also to the adrenal glands? Mm. But, you know, the thing is like we think so black and white, and we look so much at disease instead of health. And this is one of the things that makes functional and integrative medicine so much different, is we are looking at the nuances between I view the human body when it's functioning well as like a NASCAR, a highly tuned professional NASCAR, you know, driving around the track, and that's the way we want to function. So when your car is blowing blue smoke and it's knocking and all that kind of good stuff, that's a diseased car. You know, think about that car that's sputtering into the gas station and almost like passing out before it gets there. So you got that on one end. And then you have the NASCAR on the other end. And unless you have the engine that's knocking and is getting ready to blow up, what I see is, like with traditional medicine, we don't get it. And so many people aren't a NASCAR, and they aren't one of those little, you know, jalopies that's getting ready to blow up.
Both are outliers.
Exactly. But it shouldn't be. We should be NASCARs. So when you know, we're dealing with the outlier end in traditional medicine, we're dealing with the outlier end of, do you have a disease or not? This whole, I mean, forgive me, but it's just bull crap to say we have a healthcare system. We do not have a healthcare system. We do not have healthcare in this country. We have sick care. We have the International Classification of Diseases, ICD-10. We don't have the International Classification of Health. Nobody cares if you're healthy. They care if you're sick. Insurance doesn't pay for health. They pay for sick. It's just nonsense. So, sorry.
I was just going to say, now I think our listeners are understanding why this is controversial.
Exactly. And so we will take something like the adrenals, and you can feel tired and fatigued and all these kinds of things. And you go to your doctor and they say, I think I've got, quote, adrenal fatigue. A lot of information out there about adrenal fatigue, and people, I mean, what I see in my clinic is more and more people being proactive and reading and learning on their own because their doctor isn't doing it. Now, I'm not necessarily blaming their doctor. They're a function of the system, which makes me think of that Saturday Night Live skit with Adam Sandberg?
Yeah, Sandberg.
The song, I'm Not a Part of This System. I love that one. We should like play that in there. It's awesome. I'm not a part of this system. So with the adrenals, if you're tired and fatigued and all that stuff, and you go to your regular doctor and you say, I think it's this, if they don't laugh you out of the exam room, then they might get a cortisol level. It's one of the hormones that we're going to talk about in this episode. They might check a cortisol level. If they're on it, they'll bring you back for a first thing in the morning serum cortisol, serum meaning blood, serum cortisol level, if they're like on their game. Or they may just send you to an endocrinologist, whatever. So you that's not what you need. The adrenals, are there's a lot to them, and we got to assess them. So what is this adrenal fatigue thing? So I get a lot of patients that come in and see us and they say, I'm tired. I got brain fog. There's this whole litany of symptoms that can go along with adrenal fatigue. And you can run down a whole list of symptoms that are pretty common. You guys can look them up on your own. I won't waste the time here talking about all these different symptoms, but it can be really vague. It's just like, something's just not right. That I don't test everybody that comes into my clinic that says I'm just not right with some of the adrenal fatigue testing, but we consider it. And we'll talk through some of that. So if you have fatigue, it's possible that you have adrenal fatigue. There is a whole bunch of things that can cause fatigue. I see often in men, testicular hypofunction, that would be the medical term for it, but low testosterone. Got all these low testosterone clinics that are popping up all over the country, and you got the low T center and the men's clinic and this and that, and they're all dealing with testosterone. Well, and I see a lot of testosterone as well. One of my issues is when you have a 31-year-old guy that comes in because he's got low testosterone, yes, you can treat their testosterone, but why in the world is their testosterone low? That's not normal. You know, they're not 75. Why does a 31-year-old have low testosterone? And if we address testosterone without considering why their testosterone is low to begin with, we have done a serious disservice to that patient. And it is against the paradigm of functional medicine. What another thing, going off on a little bit of a tangent, we talk about functional and integrative medicine, and a lot of times testosterone replacement, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, some of these things that, you know, a lot of standard traditional doctors, you know, don't really engage in. And we'll say, you know, we're kind of put ourselves in the functional medicine realm. Well, the reality is we can use those therapies, but that doesn't necessarily make us any better than, you know, the traditional medicine route where here's your problem, here's your pill. You have a hormone deficiency and we just replace the deficiency. What's the difference in doing that and just giving you a bioidentical pill, you know, for your blood pressure? Oh, not that there's a bioidentical pill for blood pressure, but we have to address why. Why is this? I've seen 21-year-olds with testosterone in the double digits. Normal range of testosterone, depending on the lab, roughly around 300 to 1,000. And I've seen them I've seen 75 in a 21-year-old. Why in the world is that going on? Now, traditional medicine, and certainly we have to do complete and due diligence to make sure that we look into the whole thing. So we have to make sure that the anatomy is appropriate. You know, these systems are controlled by the brain and the pituitary gland, and they send these hormones that will tell these glands to make testosterone and to make this and make that and all those kinds of things. So certainly those can be problems, but that's not what I see most of the time. There's a functional reason for this. And stress is a major player in this adrenal fatigue component. So when we start talking about adrenals, I think it's important to understand what are the adrenal glands. We have normal anatomy. We have two adrenal glands, and they used to be called, another name for them would be the suprarenal glands. And the renal is the kidney. So supra meaning above. So above the kidneys, there's these little triangular shaped little bitty glands that are absolutely critical for life. You can't survive without them. So there are two different sections of them. There's the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. The adrenal medulla is the middle section, and it produces catecholamines like epinephrine, norepinephrine, those kinds of things. And you can have an adrenal tumor, a certain kind of adrenal tumor that can cause high blood pressure, and it causes high levels of those catecholamines. But the adrenal cortex is going to be the focus of what we're talking about today. And the adrenal cortex has three different layers to it. And each layer produces a different type or category of hormones. And that adrenal cortex is controlled by a number of factors, but influenced in large part by the brain. And so we have this thing called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. The hypothalamus is a section of the brain, communicates intimately with the pituitary gland, and the pituitary gland also in the brain, and it secretes a number of hormones, and in this case, ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone. So adrenocorticotropic hormone. So it's when your brain tells you to make more cortisol, it sends out ACTH, which goes to the adrenal cortex, and it stimulates the production of cortisol. And there's a bunch of other factors that go into it also. But, you know, I remember when I was in medical school, we had to memorize this hormone pathway, this adrenal hormone pathway. And I remember looking at this thing, and it's nuanced. I mean, you talk about a lot of stuff in it. And so I looked at this pathway, and I was like, okay, I'm going to memorize this for the test and then totally flush that toilet. I mean, when am I going to use this? I'm not going to be an endocrinologist. And, you know, this how ironic it is that I use that exact diagram, only I would consider that diagram condensed to how I use what I use today. But I use it almost every day. And it's showing, you know, the cholesterol is the precursor to all of these hormones. So it's one of the reasons that cholesterol is absolutely essential for life, not this horrible villain that is, you know, that has been popularized, that, you know, cholesterol is the cause of death and this the scourge of mankind. It's absolutely essential to your health. If you doubt that statement, look up Smith-Lemli-Opitz syndrome. It's, in fact, if you are homozygote, meaning have both genetic copies of Smith-Lemli-Opitz syndrome, it's incompatible with life. Most of those are spontaneous or miscarriages. So you have to have cholesterol. So cholesterol becomes pregnenolone, which goes through this whole hormone cascade and through the different layers of the adrenal cortex. You make aldosterone and progesterone and a number of precursors. And then in the middle layer, you primarily make cortisol. And then on the inner layer, you make some of your 17-ketosteroids, which would be like DHEA, androstenedione and androstenediol and testosterone and those kinds of things.
So it sounds like to me, just breaking this down, is it starts up in the brain and your brain sending signals to the adrenal the adrenal glands.
Right.
And then there's a whole host of different hormones that are produced by these adrenal glands.
Right.
That can be responsible for either keeping your body in HIPAA, balance.
Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Well, that was a good one.
That was awesome. responsible for a whole host of balance or imbalance in the body.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So basically with this hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, we've got this what's called a negative feedback system. So we have constant levels of some of these hormones and they may be low, but the brain senses that and it says, okay, this is appropriate. You know, it's like the guy's just sitting there monitoring everything and okay, that's good. That's good. That's good. That's good. Oh, not enough. Raise that up. That's too high. Raise that, you know, lower that down. And when you look at with the adrenals, one of the primary, cause they, all of these are primary and the big deals. But when it comes to things like stress and the implications of stress, the cortisol levels play a big role in this. And so if you think about this from a fight or flight kind of perspective, you know, I like to think about it as, I'm not an evolutionist, but if you think about it from an evolutionary kind of, perspective, you know, if you're a caveman and running away from a saber-toothed tiger, then you need the fight or flight component. And so this is a major stressor. Fight or flight piece comes in, your catecholamines, which we just discussed from the adrenal medulla, go rushing up, your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, breathing rate goes up, muscle metabolism starts going up so that you can run away from the saber-toothed tiger, or you can fight the bad guy, or you can do any other number of things that you would need to do. on the backside of that, you've ramped everything up. You need something to kind of mitigate some of that. And so that's one of the ways that cortisol comes in. It's more of a, what I would call a subacute. So you have the acute phase where you got to run away from the bad guy. And then you have the subacute where we have to deal with some of the consequences of some of that. And cortisol is one of the things that does that. And then certainly we need it in acute stressors as well. And so cortisol levels will kick in and help with those systems. The problem comes in when, you know, if you get chased by a bad guy, saber-toothed tiger, whatever it is, once, and then you get away from that, then everything can slowly return to what we call homeostasis, can go back to normal. And it might take a couple of days for that to go back. You know, the more relaxed we are, the better off. The problem is that our current modern day society, we're physiologically getting chased by saber-toothed tigers every day. And I don't mean that we're all stressed out emotionally on that level, but what is the definition of stress? And I would argue that stress is anything that upsets homeostasis. So we have this homeostasis, meaning just kind of our normal, where everything's kind of in balance, and something comes along and tips that cart over and it's messed stuff up. That's a stressor. So psycho-emotional stress is certainly one of those. That's the you know, shoot, I'm going through a divorce. I'm, you know, my parents kicked me out of the house. I have finals. I'm failing out of school. I lost my job. You know, any number of those kinds of things are psycho-emotional stressors that we would all often think of as, okay, yep, that's a stressful situation. Then you also have physiologic stressors. And physiologic stressors would be things like low blood sugar. So cortisol is one of the hormones that kicks in when your blood sugar drops. Now, it doesn't have to drop to 40. You know, normal blood sugar range would be roughly like 70 to 90, somewhere in there. And we try to keep a fairly tight control on your blood sugar levels. And, you know, your blood sugar will go up and certain hormones like insulin will kick in and do its thing. But when it starts to drop, and maybe it drops to, you know, 69 or whatever, you'll begin to see cortisol levels rise just a little bit. So we see so many nutritional problems in a lot of our patients that cortisol levels often respond because of low blood sugar. A lot of people come in with, quote, hypoglycemic episodes. Usually those hypoglycemic episodes are because their insulin levels went up because of a high glycemic index, high carb meal. Their insulin levels go up, and then when the insulin levels go up, blood sugar levels go down. And so the blood sugar levels come crashing down and the insulin level will come down also. But there's this period, what we call a nadir, where the blood sugar levels drop a little bit too low. So then all these other hormones kick in, like cortisol, glucagon, epinephrine, these different things will kick in to raise blood sugar levels back up. And so we have this constant process to kind of keep things in this homeostatic control thing. Now, if your blood sugars are always crashing because you're on medicines, because you're stressed, because you have hypoglycemia, because of poor dietary things, then you tend to have a little bit more cortisol. Now, if you're stressed and you have blood sugar problems, now we've got two reasons. Then you can have inflammation. There's just a whole host of reasons that you can have too much cortisol. All of those things are stressors on the adrenal glands. When you think about human physiology and how the body works, the body gets tired of certain things. It's almost like a teenager or a nagging, you know, the nagged spouse. And when you're constantly nagged, you just quit listening. And the adrenal glands, just like with insulin resistance. So, you know, I alluded to in the beginning how with diabetes, we have some physiologic mechanisms, and this is how diabetes can kind of play into this, because we get insulin resistance. We ended up having so much insulin because we have crappy diet and we have all these other issues, and we can't process blood sugar and insulin because we become resistant to it. Lots of things cause that or go into why we get insulin resistance. And the same thing can happen with cortisol. So, and the same thing can happen with with the adrenal glands, when they are constantly bombarded over and over and over again, make more cortisol, they become resistant to it. And so it messes up that hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And again, can be from psycho-emotional stressors, tissue damage, inflammation, pain, blood sugar problems, all kinds of things can cause this issue with the adrenals. So some of, and there's been studies where they've looked at the immune response in a nurturing situation and the immune response and specifically IgA levels. So it's one of the antibodies that we produce. And so in a nurturing situation, so where everything's good and like you get big, you know, warm hugs and stuff. I don't remember exactly what they did in the study, but it's like this really comfortable nurturing situation versus a very stressful situation. And I do remember that one in the study was walking across a bridge in using people that were afraid of heights to walk across a high bridge. And they measured their salivary IgA levels at the beginning and halfway across. And there was a dramatic difference. So these are stressors that impair the immune function that will, you know, if you're constantly stressed like that, it will eventually you can lead to adrenal fatigue. So if you're tired and fatigued, you go to your doctor, they check a cortisol level and they say, oh, your cortisol level is maybe on the low end of normal or on the high end of normal. But you know, it's not outside the normal range. So they'll, you know, it's not that engine that's smoking and clanking and about to die. And so they'll say, well, you know, your labs are normal. And you know, how many times have we talked about, you know, your quote, your labs are normal, but you're not that NASCAR. So this is where most of our patients come in and that there's something wrong. It doesn't meet criteria as a disease as evaluated by the number of physicians they've been to, but there's something not right. And so this is where adrenal fatigue comes in. So how do we evaluate for adrenal fatigue? And before we go into this, should we go ahead and like pay a bill?
Yeah, let's take a quick break.
Upper Cervical Health Centers is not your typical chiropractic office. Different in they never jerk, twist, snap, or crack your spine. They offer a gentle approach to address your health issues naturally. Their patients report an improvement in over 75% in their overall health. They are so much more than a neck and back pain relief clinic. Call them at 918-742-2300 or visit their website at UpperCervicalTulsa.com/newyou, that's Y-O-U, for a special offer on your first visit. Find your way back to health with Upper Cervical Health Centers. And we're back talking about adrenal fatigue and what causes it and how we can evaluate for it and ultimately what we can do about it. So, you know, again, traditional medicine, we're going to do like this single blood test. Sometimes we do some provoked testing. But it's a serum test. And when you're talking about, you got to understand that there is a circadian rhythm, meaning that your cortisol levels are going to change throughout the day. That's why at the beginning of the podcast, I said, you know, if your physician's on top of it, how you come in for a first morning level. So it's very inconvenient for a patient to come into the lab four times in a day, especially have them come in between 10 and midnight at night. So 10 PM to 12 PM. And so, or 12 AM, I guess. Next to impossible. So, we will often use a 4-point cortisol saliva test. And so we send our patients home with a kit. They fill up these little vials with spit and we send it off and get it tested. And there are, you know, I wasn't taught this in traditional medicine. It wasn't, I never asked because I didn't even know. But I've heard some physicians that will kind of say, yeah, I don't believe in that 4-point cortisol test. And so I did a little looking. Well, I've been to conferences and things like that. And the 4-point cortisol saliva test is considered the gold standard test looking at saliva or looking at cortisol levels. It is very well accepted. And there is a lot of evidence showing its effectiveness. And this is something that's very easy to do. You don't have to get your blood drawn. We give you the kit. You know, a lot of insurance companies don't pay for it, so there's a cost with it. And you're looking at, you know, anywhere from, depending on the lab, I think the cheapest one I know of is like $120 all the way up to, you know, a couple of $100s depending on which lab, what all you're getting tested, you know, those kinds of things. Sometimes we'll test hormones in conjunction with the saliva test. But so some people will think, you know, that saliva test is no good. And I'll have patients that will ask me for a cortisol, like a blood level. And one of the things that I'll tell them is because of this circadian rhythm, we should have high levels of cortisol in the morning. Should be like really definitely on the high side. And then at noon, they should drop quite a bit. They plateau in the afternoon and then they drop off just a little bit at night. So we have this rhythm to it. And again, all controlled by the brain in this hypothalamic pituitary adrenal or HPA axis. So I can get a serum cortisol level and it be 100% normal at that time. But given the circadian rhythm, it might be completely jacked up across the board. We really need to see what that rhythm looks like to understand how this whole system is working. I did a little bit of looking and was looking for a good validation or whatever. And Andrew Weil, MD, and on his website, he had a statement, and it says saliva tests for cortisol, the adrenal hormone that mediates stress responses, are now considered highly reliable, and that a growing body of evidence suggests that saliva tests can also accurately determine levels of testosterone and DHEA. So there's more and more evidence that the saliva testing is the way to go, and certainly convenient and easier for the patient. So we'll get this saliva test, and we'll evaluate what do these levels look like. And you know, I won't go into the interpretation of those tests because it really is very individual, and it's there's a little bit of an art to it. But if your cortisol levels are low across the board, the brain is not stimulating the adrenal gland to make cortisol at the appropriate times. Maybe it is stimulating it, and the adrenals just can't respond. So the brain maybe even screaming. You know, it's sending out a lot of ACTH and the adrenal glands have just said enough. I'm not listening. I can't do it. So any of those factors can certainly play a role, and it's important to delve into why is this happening. Now, when we talked about the layers of the adrenal cortex, you had the aldosterone mineralocorticoid layer, and then you have the glucocorticoid layer, which is the cortisol piece. And then that inner layer is the 7-keto steroid layer, and you're making DHEA, and testosterone is there's some role with testosterone. So it's not uncommon to see low testosterone levels, and you do a saliva test and their adrenals are shot. So it's further, I can't prove and say this definitely caused this, but these guys go together so much. And when you fix the adrenals, a lot of times their testosterone levels improve dramatically. So I think it's very important when we're considering why are their testosterone levels low, you got to look at their adrenals. So again, it's just really important to make sure that we are checking full comprehensive why our testosterone levels low. But also cortisol levels, cortisol steroids, hydrocortisone, things like that, often make people feel better. I've even seen cancer patients feel better when they were placed on steroids. I had a late 30s competitive CrossFit athlete come in to see me, and this was a really interesting case. So I guess this is my HIPAA compliant story. He came in to see me, and he was really tired. Now he's a CrossFit gym owner, competitive athlete, and all of his labs looked fantastic. Like his testosterone levels looked great. I mean, everything looked really good. But his progesterone level was really low, and progesterone is one of those in that aldosterone pathway in the outer layer of the adrenal cortex. And there was something else on his lab. I can't remember what it was. I looked at this and I was like, my gosh, that he's not making any cortisol. So we did a number of things, ended up putting him on hydrocortisone, which is a bioidentical cortisol, basically. And he like dramatic improvement in how he felt overall, and his testosterone level was normal. And so we've been working on trying to fix it where he doesn't need the hydrocortisone, but he clearly had adrenal fatigue. Now, he may meet criteria for something like Addison's disease, where it's a problem in the adrenal gland Well, you could have primary or secondary problems. Primary meaning that the brain's not making it, and then secondary meaning that the adrenal glands aren't responding to it. So, you know, it's a very, very interesting case. And so when we see this abnormal adrenal pattern and we say, yep, you got adrenal fatigue. And so, you know, for our listeners and they're thinking they've got adrenal fatigue, you know, what do you do about this? How, I think I've got this. I've got all this brain fog. I've got fatigue. I've got blah, 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 blah. What do I do? Well, I mean, the first thing I think is to get tested. And there are a number of places that you can get tested. Go find a functional medicine doc, get some saliva testing and have them evaluate your adrenals. But certainly there are other things, you know, making sure that you check thyroid and hormones and inflammation markers and blood sugar. And there's a lot of things that kind of go with this. But so certainly get tested. But in that rhythm, that cortisol rhythm, how that circadian rhythm is going to dictate how to optimize your therapy. There are some things that we will often use. There are some supplements that we use, you know, some herbal, what are called adaptogens. And these herbal adaptogens are generally plants that are grown in kind of an inhospitable environment or a hostile environment. And they have, there's some question about some heat shock proteins that there's just some adaptation that those plants have undergone in order to be able to survive in that environment. And they think that these plants confer some of that adaptability to us by, you know, these heat shock proteins and those kinds of things. So ashwagandha's one's been around forever. There's things like Shisandra and there's a number of some of the ginsengs are very good. A lot of herbal adaptogens, rhodiola, cordyceps, very good at helping to kind of cushion the adrenal gland. So they're just not getting bombarded nearly as much. So there's some herbal things that you can do. There are some other supplements. There are some you can use what are called glandulars, which is like natural desiccated thyroid. You can have natural desiccated adrenal gland. And so you can give that, which gives some of the precursors and some of the nutrition that the adrenal glands will need. You can use progesterone or pregnenolone, which are both hormones, and you need a prescription for those. At least for the, I get the pregnenolone compounded from a compounding pharmacy. You may be able to find it as a supplement. I would use some caution. And if you haven't read my book, it's available on my website, revolutionhealth.org. Under supplements, and you can download that free ebook down there that'll explain the supplement quality and some of the really poor stuff that's out there, because there's a lot of scary stuff out there. So I would encourage you to go get that ebook and read through that. But the some of the glands, the natural desiccated glands that you can use, and then also, fundamentally, going with that functional medicine role, you've got to consider, why did this happen to begin with? And so when you look at the adrenals and all those things that can cause them to go out of whack, the blood sugar problems, the chronic stress, the psycho-emotional stress, the tissue damage, inflammation, pain, those kinds of things, you have to fix all of those things too. Because if you don't, it's a really uphill battle trying to fix the adrenals when they're still getting, you know, falcon punched all day long. You know, it's, you got to quit getting punched and kicked.
So which one would you recommend fixing first?
Well, you got to fix the underlying problem. You got to remove. So if you, like, for example, if you had, if you were getting poisoned, the first step is quit getting poisoned. You know, when you get carbon monoxide exposure, the first treatment is get them out of the carbon monoxide. So remove the stressors, remove the blood sugar irregularities, and make sure we've got nice stable blood sugar. Fix that baseline stuff first. That's just, you got to do that. Then I like starting with, go with the least risky, most cost effective. I think some of the herbal stuff, especially when you get a true pharmaceutical grade supplement, something that you would get from Zymogen, really high quality stuff. That's what I would recommend as an herbal. And then I would go to the glandulars next. And then if we're still not getting anywhere, then I would look at adding like a hydrocortisone kind of thing. And when you take that comprehensive approach, We see some really fantastic results with that adrenal fatigue, and most of the time we can turn this around. Now, the last thing I'll say is that fixing this problem is not an over, it is not an overnight solution. You don't start therapy and tomorrow morning you wake up a new man, new woman. This takes months. It takes a long time to fix this, but with diligent effort on fixing that lifestyle, optimizing sleep, optimizing stable blood sugar levels, removing those stressors, then adding some herbals and adaptogens and medications when needed, then we see some really good results, but it takes consistent effort over time.
So, I think this is hugely valuable because it really applies to everyone, whether you're a college student,
absolutely,
dealing with the stresses of being in college, maybe you're in a relationship and right, the emotional stressors that come along with that.
Right.
Or maybe you have some kind of, imbalance chemically, with the hormones right, in your body,
right,
which maybe you're getting good sleep and you're on top of everything at work, but for whatever reason, you still experience that fatigue. So really this has a lot of application for all of the listeners out there.
Absolutely. And there's always a cart and the horse issue. So you mentioned, like what we talked about, hormones and things like that. And even young, you can have hormone issues that could contribute to adrenal fatigue, and you can have adrenal fatigue that contribute to hormone problems. So it requires a thorough, comprehensive evaluation. And that's what a good functional medicine, integrative medicine physician, nurse practitioner clinic is going to provide you. Is that comprehensive evaluation, and you're never going to get it in a 15-minute office visit with your primary care physician.
So let's go to that side of the fence real quick, because you were trained from the traditional perspective, the traditional medicine perspective.
Right.
How will most doctors, or what is the stigma, at least, of how most doctors might treat something like this?
Well, first of all, you got to look at, most of the time, we look at evidence-based medicine. So we're going to say, what's the study that proves this? Well, something like adrenal fatigue is so nuanced that you cannot control all of the variables that would be required to control in order to get a randomized placebo-controlled double-blinded study. Because the adrenal glands can be off because of the thyroid, can be off because of hormones, can be off because of blah, 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 blah. So you've got to make a homogeneous group. You've got to make it where everybody has the same problem. Well, number one, we don't identify in standard medicine, we don't say, okay, all these people have adrenal fatigue. We don't even do that, much less why do they have adrenal fatigue? So you're never going to get a study, well, not anytime soon anyway, on adrenal fatigue and why and what is it and all those things. So because there's no randomized placebo-controlled double-blinded study, it's not going to make its way into JAMA. It's not going to make its way into the New England Journal. So if it's not in some of these peer-reviewed journals, I have a strong suspicion that many of my colleagues will say, there's no evidence for that. And they'll just completely dismiss it. And so they're looking for that clunker car that's getting ready to blow its engine. And they're not looking for, where do we need to fine-tune? Where do we? You may not meet disease criteria. There's not a diagnosis code for adrenal fatigue. Not classic, in our definition, so to speak. You have to use one of the other codes, so to speak, because it's like an unspecified disorder of the adrenal gland kind of thing, which doesn't really describe, what we're talking about, but does kind of. So it's just not widely accepted that this is a problem to begin with. And then if there is a problem, ashwagandha doesn't have a pharmaceutical company promoting it. So there's no studies on ashwagandha for anything, much less adrenal fatigue. There's probably some studies on safety and some observational kinds of data, but no randomized placebo-controlled double-blind studies that many of my colleagues want for, and sort of understandably, there's evidence that this works, let's do that.
So hugely controversial subject.
Yep.
On A, how to diagnose it.
Right.
And B, how to treat it.
Right.
And C, if you should even treat it,
right.
Is it bad enough that you should be doing something about it?
Right.
So no, this has been hugely helpful for myself, and I'm sure all the listeners as well.
Awesome. It's a big topic, affects a lot of people, but there's a lot of things that we can do for it.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Dr. Edwards.
Thanks so much for your time. Thank you guys for listening. We look forward to seeing you next time where we're going to continue.